You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello, fiends. This is your captain speaking. Welcome to another episode of Nightmare on Film Street. I'm John.
And I'm Kim.
Oh, my co-pilot isn't with me in the cockpit. I'm coming out.
I'm showing everyone how to properly fasten their seatbelts.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Please keep your arms and legs inside the train at all times.
If you haven't figured it out by now, this week on the podcast, we are talking about two terrifying planes. One, filled with snakes. The other one, just your average old exploding plane. Filled with death. We are talking about Final Destination from 2000. We're finally doing it, guys. It's one of Kim's favorites, one of my favorites, one of your favorites, I have to assume. And also, cult classic, hidden gem. Undiscovered, maybe you've heard of it, Snakes on a Plane from 2006,
which just celebrated its 15th anniversary, which
Happy
is
birthday,
fucking
snakes.
Insane. Those snakes are so old.
Hollywood royalty at this point, right? I think some of those snakes' babies are actors now.
Oh,
as Hollywood will do.
But before we get started, we are going to walk our way over to the loading terminal, the What's Keeping Us Creepy Bay of this terrifying little airport.
The cargo hold where we've kept our thousands of movie recommendations.
Where you must check your bag because it does not fit in the overhead compartment because there's too many snakes up there. John, what is keeping you creepy this week?
August has turned out to be an overwhelming month for movies. That's what I've learned. There are two film festivals that we're covering, but there are also a whole ton of movies that are coming out in the theater, exclusively in the theater, which I gotta tell you, when I see those words on a trailer, sounds like a threat. only in theaters. Like, okay, well, I guess I'll risk my life to go see that movie. No big deal. That's the world we're still living in. We recently caught Don't Breathe 2, which is such a great sequel, guys. I gotta tell you, it's unheard of to take a villain from the first movie, a person who is a self-reported murderer, kidnapper, rapist, and then make him the protagonist that you have to root for. They do an incredible job in this movie of flipping the table on that, because you do actually root for him, partly because he is a bad guy. But the people that have kidnapped his daughter are even worse, because they kill dogs.
John, you fucking love this shit.
Oh, man, this is modern exploitation filmmaking at its finest. I fucking loved this movie. I did not expect to like it this much, but it's so brutal. There's a dude in there who only uses a hammer to kill people, and it's rough. There is also a great review. If you're still on the fence about checking it out, because I've seen the reactions have been pretty polarizing. I think people are having a hard time buying into the idea that they're going to root for somebody who was a villain, like a very bad person in the first movie. But there is a great review on the website from a reviewer, Chris Vogel. So if you still need convincing to check this movie out, look no further than nofspodcast.com.
We also checked out, like the rest of the world, Suicide Squad. Is it The Suicide Squad?
The Suicide Squad.
We also checked out The Suicide Squad, the sort of sequel, not sequel, to the original film, with your favorite unknown misfits from various comics of yore.
Which one was your favorite?
Character?
Yeah.
Probably the one who had the arms that came off.
The guy?
And he smacked people with them. TDK?
TDK, I think, yeah. The detachable kid. That's the name.
I liked him.
Yeah, he was pretty funny. I'm gonna cast my vote for Starro, the big fucking bad, who shows up halfway through this movie and is a surprise villain at the end. I really enjoyed that movie. We've actually had a chance to see it twice at the theater now, once at the multiplex and another time at the drive-in. I don't think it was as good the second time around.
No!
lost a little bit of that luster.
Yeah, a lot of the film hinges on like funny little one-liners. And
oh yeah, they don't, those jokes do not land nearly as hard the second time around.
They don't play as well the second time.
Yeah, and when you're a little removed from the movie, I don't think Harley Quinn's storyline
works. I don't think so either. I love Harley Quinn, and her little flower sequence was top notch.
That was genius.
Fucking love a javelin fight.
It's a super weird movie. I'll give it that. It's probably the most violent superhero movie you've ever seen. It's definitely the superhero movie that has the most dick jokes in it. And it's got a giant fucking alien starfish monster that has little baby alien starfish monsters that shoot out of its armpits.
I thoroughly enjoyed.
So great. I really enjoyed the movie. Like we said, did not enjoy it nearly as much the second time, but I highly recommend checking it out in the movies because it's a good night out.
So on top of theater-going experiences, which we're super stoked to be doing again, and we'll probably not lose the novelty for at least the next 5 years, fingers crossed, we've also been knee-deep in film festival coverage. We've been simultaneously hitting up Fantasia International Film Festival virtually, as well as Popcorn Frights. One from Popcorn Frights that I really loved was Superhost, the third feature film from Brandon Christensen. It is an Airbnb horror gone wrong with perhaps one of the greatest villains of all time. Like, so fucking cool, and I am not exaggerating. Is definitely going to end up on many a top 10 list, I think. Just this character alone, she is fucking fantastic. And that is hitting Shudder very, very soon, September 2nd. So
yeah.
I don't know if you have like a day planner or like you actually use the calendar on your phone, but put Superhost in it.
Superhost also has a surprise appearance from Barbara Crampton. Fan favorite. Everybody always loves Barbara. And also, Kim is not kidding around. She says that is a villain for the ages in that movie. She's like Hello Mary Lou level of maniacal evil.
Ooh.
She's such an incredible performance from that actress. Also, the movie features my new favorite knife wound. Oh man, so good.
New favorite knife wound. What a like emo band title.
If I could recommend one movie from Popcorn Frights, it's a screen life thriller, sort of in the vein of Brian De Palma's Blowout. It's a political thriller about a video editor who's been given a evidence file from the police.
Accidentally.
Oh, it's unrestricted, and it proves once and for all.
Cops are bad.
Yes. Yeah, so a politician has been murdered. The cops have spun that story however they feel like, but he has now been given video evidence that proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that he was assassinated by the police department. And surprise, surprise, that's not the kind of information you want to land on your desk. But it's a really good screen life thriller. It's not fully screen life. It breaks away from his computer screen when it needs to. And it's a tight little thriller. I really enjoyed it.
You didn't say the name of the film. It's called Dash Cam.
Did I not?
You did not.
It's called Dash Cam. Which, if you've been following film festival news, there's another movie called Dash Cam coming to TIFF soon from the creators of Host. So one of those two movies is probably changing its title soon. For the time being, you can check our review out of that movie at nofspodcast.com. Just search Dash Cam.
And at Fantasia Festival, tons of movies coming out. Tons of really awesome fucking movies.
My letterbox tells me that I've watched like 550 movies this year. I think 300 of them alone have been from Fantasia.
One that I want to plug is also a screen life movie. It is called #blue_whale. It is a Russian film that follows the urban legendy creepypasta lore of the Blue Whale Challenge, which is sort of real. Had kind of its big day in 2016. It's a game that a bunch of teenagers and tweenagers allegedly played, where they are eventually like coerced into committing suicide after completing these tasks that have like, you know, increasingly terrible outcomes. It's a really wonderful movie. It really utilizes the online found footage format perfectly.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We jump from Facebook to live streams to iPhone videos and back again. And something unique that this film does, it actually like zooms in and stuff. So like there's a lot more control over where you should be focusing on the screen, which is something that kind of overwhelms me sometimes when I'm watching screen life movies, mm-hmm. on like, what should I be watching?
Yeah, it's a maximalist format for sure.
Definitely. I had a ton of fun with this one. It is a fast-paced movie. There is a ton of information and a lot goes on. And normally I'm kind of the opposite with found footage. It's kind of like slow and brooding and like, oh, we got lost in the woods with this camera. And Screen Life is kind of the polar opposite of that while still being in the same kind of, this is real. Let's pretend this is real. So really loved that. That is #blue_whale. And it had its world premiere at Fantasia, so hopefully we get some release information soon.
Yeah, I'd like to recommend two movies at Fantasia right now. The Sadness, actually, that we talked about last episode is playing later this week, so if you were interested in that, definitely check out the Fantasia website. I think tickets are $8. Super gory, zombie-type movie. But the two movies I want to recommend. One had a very fixed schedule screening, so you won't have an opportunity to see it yet. But it is coming to Shudder early 2022. It's called Hellbender. It's from the Addams Family.
1D.
1D, the Addams Family. It's a family of filmmakers. We've talked previously about their other movie, The Deeper You Dig, which was also at Fantasia, but they are just a family that makes movies together. They write them together, they act in them together, they edit them together. This movie, the two lead characters are in a band which is based off the real family band they have called Hellbender. And it's a like witchy good time. It's isolated family in the forest, sort of a coming of age story, but with these witch, demon, predator monsters. It's a fucking blast. Also, a movie that you can check out at any time because it's part of Fantasia's on-demand portion, Frankenzed. I think I've talked about it in the podcast
you
before.
You have.
Okay, well, at the very least, if this is my 100th time recommending it to you, please seek out Frankenzed. It is a super, super gory puppet movie. Like, in fact, it's probably the goriest movie you're going to see this year. But it's all puppets. And the gore is all real gore. It's not like felt and you know.
These puppets bleed real blood.
These puppets bleed real blood. And the main characters are a Frankenstein monster and a zombie who are just trying to live their life quietly. It really looks like the movies I respond to a lot are two people living alone. At least lately, I guess.
With a tiny little dog.
With a tiny little dog, yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, the villagers come knocking on their door one day when they decide they want to kill the Frankenstein robot and the zombie. But you can check that out at Fantasia from now until I think August 25th. That's Frankenzed. I think you're gonna love it. And shout out to Chris Akins, who's again helping us with our Fantasia coverage. A third of the reviews you read on the website will be from him as well.
Woo! Before we increase altitude and send you off on your way, just a reminder that the Fiend Club is continuing our month-long watch party of Friday the 13th, the series, this Friday night. We are watching some more episodes. It has been a complete blast. A first-time watch for John and I. And some of the fiends are rewatching, and we are experiencing the urban legendiness of the Friday the 13th series.
Yeah,
that
if you've
has
ever
zero connections to Jason Voorhees.
Right? Yeah, if you've ever wanted to know what the Friday the 13th would be like if it had no Jason Voorhees at all, then this is the series for you. It was a harsh realization for some of the people watching with us last time, because like us, when we first heard about the series, we assumed, oh, Jason all day every day, great,
they use the font. But we are having those watch parties every Friday night. It's three or so hours. We watch three episodes. John curates a whole bunch of really fun classic commercials from the year that the series released, 1987, as well as some fun spooky Halloween commercials just to keep things, you know, on theme. It's always such a blast. The Fiend Club is amazing. We always have so much fun laughing and joking and watching stuff. So if you want to join us, hit up nofspodcast.com/fiendclub for details on how to join the watch party. You gotta be a Fiend Club member. It's $6 a month, and that goes directly to the growth of Nightmare on Film Street.
This is your captain speaking. We are approaching landing, and you'll see at the window to your left a hole in the side of the plane, because that all your friends are currently being sucked out of. Thank you very much for flying with Air America.
That was really,
can you imagine if the pilot came on during that scene in the movie?
You'll see the oxygen masks have deployed. If any of you are still alive, I advise you to use them.
We're going to break into our terrifying plane double feature. We're kicking it off with James Wong's Final Destination.
I got this feeling. It's a weird feeling. The cabin starts to shake, right? And the left side blows up, and then the whole plane just explodes.
The plane can explode! It's not a joke!
We get thrown off the plane all because Browning has a bad dream?
I saw it.
The plane! It's gonna blow up!
All 287 passengers are feared dead.
Because of you, I'm still alive.
In death, there are no accidents. No coincidences. And no escapes.
Did it happen again? Did you see Todd die?
What if it was our time? What if we were not meant to get off that plane? What if there is a design, then it's not finished?
By walking off the plane, you're cheating death. You have to figure out when it's coming back at you.
What are you, God now?
He knows which one of us is next.
You have a responsibility to tell me.
I knew I should have hit on Tammy in the pool that time.
I'm not gonna let it happen, okay?
Nobody has control over life and death. Unless they are taking lives and causing death.
I'll see you soon.
Final Destination, from the year 2000, currently sits at a 6.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 35% on Rotten Tomatoes, 36% on Metacritic, and 3.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
I don't know what I was expecting here, but not this.
You're expecting unanimous critical praise.
100% from Rotten Mato. I am really...
Mr. Mato.
Bernie Tomato. What?
Yeah, I also...
People don't like this?
Some people don't. They don't have... Here's the thing. What age were you when you saw it? That's what it all
11.
Comes down to, right?
In theaters with my grandpa.
Yeah, that's an immediate 5-star bump.
Oh, boy. No.
Not everyone's favorite.
I was going to come out the gate and be like, okay, guys, so I'm going to argue. Hello, and welcome to my pod talk. Today, I'm going to prove to you how Final Destination is the greatest horror film of all time.
The greatest horror film of all time. That's a lot. I'm almost with you. This movie fucking
rocks. Do I need to kick you off the show? What?
The greatest horror film of all time. That's a great question.
Okay, so like, it's not The Exorcist. It's not fucking Jaws.
Sure.
But in terms of fantastic horror concepts, you cannot find anything better than Final Destination.
This is exactly what I say about The Purge all the time. Bam, great concept. Holy shit. What an incredible idea, and there's so much you can do with it. Doesn't mean every single one of those movies is perfect.
Are you trying to shit on Final Destination's execution?
Not really.
Do you want to fight? I will punch you in your Devin Sawa-hating face!
I really like The Final Destination. I think it rocks.
I think it's the best film ever.
I think when I saw it when I was 12, I thought it was the greatest horror movie of all time.
I did too.
I have seen a lot of horror movies since then.
And it still holds up.
It holds up really well.
That has been this week's episode of Nightmare on Film Street.
If only it were that easy.
I cannot give enough praise to the fucking concept, because death as a
slasher villain,
omnipotent force, a murderous force,
a
Tony Todd endorsed force, endorsed at bare minimum, endorsed. I'll see you soon.
That is one of the greatest fucking moments in modern horror. Is it even modern horror anymore?
Modern Sprites.
I guess it's not.
Yeah, no, I think it's fucking bomb. I think the concept is really great. It sets up for really fun individual scare sequences that are so recyclable that I'm going to put this out there. And I know we were probably talking about this in the last episode, how Friday the 13th is maybe the best horror franchise of all time.
I was going to say, what kind of consistent.
Final Destination is the best horror franchise of all time because it's the most consistent. Because the concept is so fucking good. Most consistently delivers.
I'm going to agree with you on that one.
Yes.
It's...
because it's right.
Pretty rad.
Because it is correct.
It belongs up there next to the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise and that...
You mean the...
the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise,
yeah,
and the other ones. My mind went blank for a sudden. You know, those big hitters, your Halloweens and whatnot. Anyway, great concept, great every time. The one thing I think this franchise has that other ones don't is that you really need zero connection between each movie.
Yeah. And it doesn't let you down. Like, it doesn't have any lofty promises other than... a bunch of, like, Rube Goldberg machines.
Yeah. And, you know, that's ingenious of them, because it's not just, like, death is a shadow who appears and kills you and then makes it look like an accident. Like, afterward, he stages it like, hey, it was a robbery.
He's cleaning up the mess, yeah, getting rid of his fingerprints.
Yeah. No, there's none of that. It's like, that the water, like, the toilet bowl cracks and the water flows across the floor and you slip and you die. And there's always, like, a whole bunch of fake-outs throughout the whole thing.
Oh, it's so fucking ingenious.
But before we get into the kills of it, though... The real core of it is that someone has a premonition that something terrible is going to happen.
And in this one, we should highlight it because we are doing an airplane-themed episode.
Right? That's a good idea. Yeah, that is the tie-in between both of these movies.
Yeah, so Flight 180 is the flight, and Devon Sawa is going on a trip with his classmates. They're going to France to go speak French with their French teacher. And he has, like, just a really unsettling feeling leading up to boarding the plane.
I love that.
Tons of teeny little things. And, like, most of them are just weird coincidences. Like, his birthday, September 25th, is the exact same time that the flight leaves. And also, I don't know if you noticed this.
What?
His official seat, which comes up later, his official seat,
uh-huh,
is 25. It's in row 25.
Ooh.
Just another little coincidence.
What do you think is the... So there's a hilarious moment at the beginning where there's the luggage tag from the previous flight that his... because it's his dad's luggage, right? He's using his dad's suitcase, and he still has the luggage tag from his last flight. And he's like, no, don't tear it off. You gotta leave it. It's like, good luck or whatever. And mom... tears it, and there's just like a moment where the score really highlights it, like,
and the camera lingers,
yeah,
as it like flutters down.
Like, is that all it takes to transgress? God damn!
In any other movie, Alex Devon Sawa would be neurotic. We know this is out of character for him because he looks kind of like your everyday kind of like bummy teenager. He doesn't look like he's one of the popular kids. His friend also doesn't look like one of the popular kids. They kind of look like your B group, you know, the ones that don't really give a shit about the hierarchy of high school.
Yeah.
And are just doing their own thing until they can fucking graduate. The fact that he's reacting to all these little anxieties kind of snowballs into what becomes a very real premonition, like, I'm going to see the future premonition. Up until that point, it's just these weird coincidences, which, if, you know, if you're the type of person who's afraid of flying, I'm sure your ears are perked up anytime you're at an airport and you're going to notice weird shit like that and try to bury it as soon as you notice it. Being like, oh, I can see right down to the loading dock through the gap between the plane and the highway or the air highway.
Does that bother you?
It scares the shit out of me. Because I'm like, we're already outside.
Okay.
I don't know. Things like that. Things that remind you a plane is actually a plane, I do not like. I'm not too terrified of flying. Like, I will never avoid anything because of a flight.
Sure.
But I'm definitely unsettled when I'm mid-flight. The thing I really have to stop myself from doing is thinking that there's, like, 50,000 feet of air between my feet and the ground that I think I'm on and actual ground. I like to just pretend that the bottom of the airplane is actually ground.
And it was just, they never took the wheels up and we're just scooting along.
We're just waiting on the tarmac for hours and hours and hours. Yeah,
for the wormhole to open.
And the thing that really fucks that up for me is turbulence. Turbulence wrecks my entire illusion and then I'm just like, can this please stop?
Yeah, turbulence is annoying because it's not predictable like bumps on the road. Bumps on the road have like a pattern to them, or they're just like little vibrations that go back and forth. Turbulence is just like, hey, what the fuck is happening right
now? Turbulence,
like,
is different. Like if you're on a fucking train and it's rocking a lot because it's windy out, whatever. But in a plane, like when the pilot's like, excuse me, folks, we're coming up to like some crazy ass air pockets and the next hour's gonna fucking suck. Barf bags are in front of you. Okay, seatbelt signs on.
That's so funny. I have no worries about flying whatsoever.
You just don't have worries.
Yeah, that's true. I just don't have worries. That's not something I necessarily live with all the time. Like, I got into a car accident. The whole front end of the car was destroyed. And I was like, can you fucking believe this? Oh, that was terrifying. But, but yeah, flying has never bothered me whatsoever. I love the opening of this movie, though, because it doesn't seem like flying has ever bugged Alex, but something.
Something.
And so he is justifying it by like, oh, I must just be scared of flying. That's what's happening. I'm nervous about the flight. But it's not that. He knows it's not that. He's trying to tell himself it's that. But there's just this sense that there are patterns happening.
There's a
around
foreboding
him.
Doom building.
Yeah, it's... It's what I fear, like, onset insanity would be like, where you just feel like everything is talking to you, and it's all pointing towards something, and you just need to figure out what it's pointing to. I guess he figures out what it all is when he fucking has a vision of the entire plane just ripping apart and blowing up in the sky.
And it actually looks really fantastic.
Yeah, we watched a VHS cop. Maybe it's because we watched it on VHS. Like, if we got, like, a 4K Blu-ray restoration, I don't know.
And I will say, the VHS copy, it's probably, like, one of the last VHSs that came out because it was, like, really good shape.
Yeah, it was, yeah. We obviously haven't, like, watched it over and over and over and over
again. I don't
again.
Think, and I'm going to say this with full, I'm not lying here, as good as DVD.
Yeah. Sure. Undeniable. You could definitely hold the two of them side by side and not tell the difference.
I mean, the aspect ratio, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although there's no, from what I remember, there's no pan and scan in this, there is a lot of weird visual stuff. And mm-hmm. I don't have the technological know-how to like properly say kind of what it is, but you were mentioning that the frame rate changes at times, but I noticed that there's frequent moments, and maybe it's because they're using a lot of like green screen and stuff behind the actors, and it's like early green screen days,
yeah,
where it almost feels like in scenes, especially pre-kills, where even if you weren't familiar with the film, you'd kind of get a like an inkling something was about to happen, because it almost looks like the actors are superimposed on a background.
There are a few moments of that, yeah, and that's definitely like green screen stuff, I would think. Some of the death sequences that are really drawn out, like specifically the teacher's death, Mrs. Val Luton, which is great. It's really noticeable in hers that they're doing like high frame rate shit, because she's just like pouring a tea and then pouring a mug of vodka when she decides she doesn't want tea. So you can really see that it's shot in a higher frame rate, and I think it's just to get you sucked into the moment a little more. Like, it's not like there's anything to like show off. Like, nothing's happening super fast that you want to like really make sure you see in crystal clear clarity. It's just to trick your brain into getting like a heightened sense of awareness, and you know, you're really locked into what's going on.
Yeah, it's so weird too, because I was reading, and this was after I kind of, and I've had this feeling for a few years seeing the film, where I'm like, oh, you can kind of feel something different. Mm. And almost see something different, but you can't visually pinpoint it in these scenes. And I always thought it was like something to do with the compression for VHS or something.
Oh.
But I was reading today, just before we started recording, that they built several different sets to create like an uneasy feeling during the death sequences, and that kind of like in the OG The Haunting, how there's like no straight angles. There's some really tiny details where like things are a little bit askew and like just enough to make you uncomfortable. And something really cool that they did for any of the set pieces that you see before the accident, they do not have that detail. So his room before the accident is a normal room, and there's a second set where everything's a little bit askew, and they film there exclusively after the Flight 180 accident.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
I love filmmaking stuff like that.
Yeah, that's genius. And it's probably because it has a sense of like a dreaminess to it, right? Like it feels like you're in some sort of bizarro world next to your own.
Because
they're surrounded by death at that point. You're just in his little sandbox and he's just playing around with you.
Well, that's the kind of the thing too, is that you think you're the pilot of your own life, but in those moments I think death definitely has control. And it's kind of cool that there's like a visual change in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate that was like the early 2000s, so you're like, is the CGI weird here?
Yeah, and you know, when you go to see a movie in the theater, especially just like as a regular audience member, you don't notice that shit. You just walk out and go, that fucking movie rocked, you know? So it equates to dollars at the end of the day is all that matters. People are scared, people responded to it, and they made their friends go see it. And they sure fucking did.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was probably because of that plane crash sequence, which is so awesome. Like we skipped over it a little bit, but goddamn do I want to talk about it, because I think it rivals any of the Rune Goldberg stuff in the rest of the movie.
Okay.
I don't necessarily think it has it's scarier or more unnerving than some of the other ones, but I just love how it looks. I think I just like seeing planes blow up in the air on film. Like I definitely don't like seeing it on the news. But it looks horrifying, and it's drawn out in such a really interesting way. There is that unfortunate guy who gets an extra who definitely had a very real radio smack him on the back of the head. Did you catch that?
Well, at least they put it in the film.
Yeah, somebody got injured, I'm sure, and they're
exactly. At least that's the take they used.
Yeah, that's true.
What I don't love about it, but as a horror fan, what I love about
it is, I know what you're talking
is
about.
Just how inescapable planes are. Like, there's nothing you can do, which I don't even want to get into that because I don't need us all being afraid of flight by the end of this episode.
Okay.
But my favorite moment in that is that we actually see Alex, Stefan Sawa, engulfed in flames as the dream is ending. And
that's,
As a frequent nightmare, I appreciate that and am also horrified.
Yeah, it's scarier when you know he's the one having that vision.
Oh, because I know I'm not the only one out there that has dreams where they're like, oh yeah, you know how like when you dream you're falling and you wake up and you never hit the ground? Well, like, I'm the kind of dreamer where I die in my dreams and I do not wake up until days later. Like what'll happen is I'll die in my dream and then my brain will be like, oh, let's just reset it a bit so we can go through that again and maybe not die this time. It's just like, this isn't fucking Mario. Like, let me out.
That's your brain trying to make sense of you watching a billion horror movies. Like, why is she doing this? Like, I don't know. I think it's like a simulation. Like, we're just like testing out different ideas. We could do that.
My brain is trying to teach me how to be a final girl, but I'm just not a final girl.
You die every time. That's the problem, yeah. You know, with the exception of Devon Sawa getting his face fucking melted by that fire, it's a relatively non-violent plane crash. Like, realistically, like, yes, one of the windows, like, blows open and
yes,
somebody gets
people
sucked.
People are sucked out of the
right
plane.
Right the fuck out. But you don't see any of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like there's gore. We're not seeing people get their arms ripped apart and there's fucking intestines flying everywhere. What's really effective about it, I guess, is that we all secretly have a small fear of flying buried way down in us or right up top, depending on who you are. But there's this great little insert shot that's just like,
is it the Milk Duds?
Well, I love the Milk Duds.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Milk Duds are genius because they show whether or not the plane is rocking back and forth. They're taking a nosedive. That's brilliant. It's also reused in Snakes on a Plane. But, there's this little insert shot that's just like the corner of the flight cab. And they just like splash like a bucket of blood up in the corner. That's it. That's all. Like, we never see anybody get severed in half and stuff. At least I don't think. But it feels so incredibly violent because of little inserts like that.
Well, and also a few of the kids are apprehensive as they're getting on the plane, and there's like a mom and a newborn baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's a disabled man, and they're like, oh, God would have to be some sick fuck to take this plane down. And, well.
What's your favorite death in the movie?
So it's a super complicated answer because the first death by death. The first...
Can that be the title of the episode?
Like, the first catch-up death, the first murder by catch-up,
sure.
Is Alex's best friend, Todd, and it's that bathroom scene. And maybe this is, like, me having kind of a nostalgia fear for when I saw this when I was 11 in the theater, and it terrified the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
But that death hurts the most, I think, for me emotionally.
Oh, yeah.
And... it's really weird, and I feel this about all of the characters, and this must be a testament to how them being really well written, so you kind of already know who they are. They don't have a lot of screen time. Like, I remember the bully guy and his girlfriend for, like, a while. I did not realize Todd dies so front up, but I remember him being one of the first ones to die. But we know who Todd is when he dies. Which is crazy because we really only get a good glimpse of him at the memorial service.
Yeah, outside of that, he's just like the goofy best friend that you would see in any horror movie at the airport, right?
And also...
we gotta take a shit before we go on the plane.
That was funny. Also, his death is just so brutal and the camera stays with him the whole time. And I guess because it's not like a slasher killer, there's almost like a hope that he can get out of it.
It's very
hopeless.
And
the film really tries to give opportunities so that you maintain that hope even when his eyes have filled with blood.
It's rough to watch and I don't like it.
And the clothesline is tight on his neck and he's grappling at it. And then the fucking shampoo bottle spills in the tub and he can't. Like,
yeah.
That for me is the hardest moment because he cannot stand up in the tub because it's so fucking slippery. And the scissors are right on the edge of the sink. And it's just, it is so uncomfortable to watch. And it never gets easier.
Death is so cruel. Like, death is so cruel. The craziest thing about that is that, like, throughout that whole sequence, okay, he's maybe gonna get electrocuted, turning the radio on, like, no, don't do that, and then he's trimming nose hairs. You're like, oh God, that's gonna go in your brain. And by the time he's being strangled in the bathtub, you're like, why couldn't we have just had him shove those scissors up his nose? Like, the thing that you kept saying no about is the thing that you're wishing happened, like, 30 seconds later. It's, I don't like that death. And it's crazy that that's the first one. They're like, hey, guess what, Fox? This is what you're dealing with.
Yeah, because he is our, like, accomplice character. He is Alex's best friend. You'd think that he would be with him most of the movie, helping him figure this out, because Alex has a lot to figure out in this movie. There is a lot of information that he needs to get, and he needs to jump some leaps and bounds. He needs to get over the fact that he had this, like, impossible premonition. His entire school has ostracized him because that's fucking freaky.
Yeah.
And
I love when the teacher's just like, get the fuck away from me, you terrify me. That's so good.
It's so weird because you have so many conflicted emotions. Like, it's not just like, thanks for saving me. It's just like, all of our friends are dead. And like, why am I still alive?
They do a really good job of playing on the survivor's guilt of that scenario. And I think that's partly what Todd's death is. Like, everybody just assumes. That's what's really sad, too. Is that
because he had his brother.
At no point is anybody going to think that he was killed. Or he died in a freak accident. It's just, oh, this poor child committed suicide because he couldn't take it. That's terrible. Like, that's so brutal for those fucking parents. That's how you know you've gotten a little older, too, when you start to, like...
empathize with the dads being all like,
yeah.
And you're like, he can't help that he had a psychic moment.
Yeah, you're just like, both of their children are gone. You're like, their future. You know, I love the idea that people experience something right before their own death. Like, something like a premonition right before their own death, but there's never anybody to tell. Like, the idea that you would have all of the knowledge of something, but only for a half a second, and then you're gone. Like, spoiler alert for a movie that came out in the 60s and also the 90s, Ligette and the 12 Monkeys, that's kind of what it's about. It's like he has this memory from childhood of seeing a person die in the airport. And at the end of the movie, because it's a time travel movie, he dies at an airport and sees a younger version of himself. But It's only in his death as an adult does he realize what he saw as a child that's been haunting him his whole life. That's fucking rad. And Final Destination plays on it too. Do you think this movie is trying to say that in all catastrophes like this, where hundreds of people die, somebody has some sort of inkling about it, but they don't act on it because they just brush it off? Like, I'm just scared about the flight. I'm just worried about something else. And that, but in like the few seconds before they die, like, shit, I should have said something.
Well, I definitely think there's an air of like, you have to use your intuition and heed the warnings and stuff. But yeah. Like, we also all have dealt with anxieties in our whole lives and know that you can't fucking do that or you will crumble.
Yeah.
In the sense of things, the catalyst of these movies is always fantasy.
Yeah.
And then it takes you to a place that's just so fucking like a fun to use Final Destination 3 is just a fucking roller coaster.
Did you know that the guy James Wong, who directed this, also directed Final Destination 3?
Because Final Destination 3 is bomb.
Yeah, the two best. 1 and 3, right? Oh boy. I also this time around was thinking that maybe this is just something death does for fun. Cause the idea I think is that, okay, I'm just gonna say this out loud so we can move past it. I think the third act of this movie is a fucking mess. Like, I think the third act of this movie doesn't know what to do.
It's a little bit of a mess.
Yeah, but so Devon Sawa learns that there might be a pattern. And we get that when we meet Tony Todd, whose character's name, if I wrote it down, what is it?
He's like the mortician.
Bloodworth is the character's name, the mortician. When they sneak in to see Todd to find out whether or not there was any sort of evidence.
They sneak in to see the corpse Todd, not Tony Todd.
Oh, that's that fucking great line. Thank you. I didn't catch that. There is a great moment where they're standing in front of corpse Todd, and they say, well, whatever it was that made him Todd's gone. It's like, God damn!
Oh, yeah.
God damn!
Oh, fuck. Like, kids, you're good, you're deep, you graduated.
So they learn that you can't cheat death's design. Okay, so death has a design, and Devon Sawa figures out that the...
If we figure out the design, maybe we could cheat the design.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's how they're sort of skating by in a majority of the movie. If we can figure out where we're going to die, and Devon Sawa's got a prediction about it, and we act on that prediction, then we can skip... Then, you know, we can cheat death, it skips us, and we're A-okay. Because I think that's what they're trying to say in this first movie, that if you can skip it a second time, like when death comes back to get you,
I don't think
safe.
There's any theory, because they're just fucking kids trying to not die.
But it kind of seems like they're safe.
Does it?
I don't even know.
Because, so, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched the film we're talking about, the bully kid, the film ends, like, cuts to black, killing the bully kid, who's already skipped it once.
Yeah. In my memory, all three of them die there.
I think they're just intending to skip death for the rest of their life.
They seem like they're pretty cool with it, though. That, like, 6 months later, they're like, well, that's all done, thank God. I guess also because it doesn't... For 6 months, it seems like death hasn't been coming for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they felt safe to go on this trip. But what's really interesting in the end of the movie, there's something Devon Sawa says about not being able to see the pattern or the pattern being bigger than he thought. I think the third act of the movie where... it's coming after him in the cottage, and then it's coming after Allie Larder at her house, where there's electricity everywhere, and she's stuck in the car, and he's gotta save her, you know, all of that junk. I think they make it out of that a little too conveniently, because I think that's part of Death's design, that they felt safe again to then go somewhere together, and he could kill them all in one spot.
Yeah, and that makes sense, too, because... During that point, you're like, it's just skipping the two of these people back and forth.
Yeah, because where the fuck is the jock this whole time, right?
Yeah, because, like, Devon Sawa is almost getting killed by, like, fishing lures. And then Allie Larder is, like, climbing out of her pool and saving her dog while there's a live wire trying to, like, electrocute them both.
Yeah, it's a little messy, the third act. I love it. But it's a little messy.
Yeah, I will agree with you. But let's move on. So apart from Todd's non-suicide, is there another, like, death moment that you enjoy or gives you the willies?
I mean, I really like when Sean William Scott gets his head cut off, because that's just funny, and it looks good. But 100% I'm going with Terry's death when she gets hit by the bus.
It's really jarring.
Yeah, it comes because you forget about it. Like Devon Sawa has that prediction of the bus in the window, and you're like, oh, that's weird. There's no bus. Something's gonna happen, and then Jock shows up, and everybody's mad at each other.
It's good dialogue. Don't flip.
No, it's all good dialogue. And you know what? Kerr Smith, who plays Carter, the jock, he's a great asshole in this movie.
He does a really good job.
Really good job. And he loves his girlfriend. Like, as much
and
as...
And Nine Inch Nails.
As much of an asshole as he is, he actually seems to like Terry. Every other jerk in the rest of the franchise, it's just an abusive relationship and the girl really needs to get out of it. But he actually seems to like her.
He actually does really like her.
Yeah. But when she turns around and walks out of the street, like, y'all can just fuck off. And then, bam, just smashed by a bus.
It's good. I honestly think that it has been replicated so many times since then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that first... The first time you see the POV switch in the car, where we're seeing directly out
you're
the
like,
passenger.
Oh, they're getting hit by a car.
100% they're getting T-boned. We all know that. The first time it came, it was revolutionary. But now it's everywhere. They even use it in insurance ads now.
Speaking of being hit by a car, you did briefly mention the jock / Sean William Scott death.
Yeah.
I kind of love that the jock goes off the hinges there and wants to, like, get control over his own life. And it's kind of fun because he doesn't die in his crazy balls-to-the-wall escapade where he's, like, cutting off semi-trucks and driving through red lights and stuff. And part of me kind of thinks that's because death isn't after him right now. So he very well could be above death in those moments, which is really interesting. I'd love to see the franchise kind of explore that. Like,
oh, how you just, like, you technically can't die unless death is literally after
you?
Yeah. Ooh, that's interesting.
And I love how it waits until he's stuck on the train tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Right at the moment where he thinks, he's like, no, I'm in control. I'm not dying today. And death is like, ha! It's pretty fucking great.
Car won't start and your seatbelt's locked, you fuck! Well, I guess the only one we're missing at this point is the teacher's death, which sucks. You know, like, it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. It's great. It just sucks to watch because he's like, fuck, you did everything you thought was right. Like, you called the cops and everything.
And hers is one of the most drawn out.
Yeah.
It really goes on, and we are, like, going through her entire house, and there's so many things that can kill you in your goddamn house.
Now, she pours ice cold vodka into a cup that just had boiling hot water in it, which cracks the cup. Genius. You pointed that out while we were watching, and I was like, you're right, that is fucking brilliant.
It's just good screenwriting.
Yeah, and because of the crack, vodka goes into the computer blows up, the screen punctures her in the neck, and as she's trying to walk and fix this wound, fire from the computer. I forgot about the fire. It starts chasing her via her blood. Is that because there's, like, a stabbed her in the neck and she was drinking vodka? Or is it just like, guess what? Fire can travel through blood.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I like
Maybe some alcohol spit. Oh, because she was dripping the vodka all the way over, so she made a trail.
Oh, that's right. What it followed.
Yeah.
Oh, good screenwriting.
Yep.
That's good. Man, death knows what's up.
Yeah, and then she gets impaled with her own knife block. It's all real rough.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely my favorite scene when I was growing up. And I think it's partly because the chair falls on her and gives it, like, that final, like, death blow. Sucks.
So rude.
So rude. And Devon Sawa, of course, grabs that knife like a fool.
It's interesting that, we haven't really mentioned this at all, that the FBI is kind of tailing him the whole time because they're like, why did these 8 people survive off this plane?
And why did this and one also, kid know it was going to blow up?
Exactly. And then all of these survivors are dying one by one, and Devon Sawa is at the scene of all of them. The only thing is that, like, Terry getting hit by a bus has nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
And Sean William Scott getting hit by a piece of metal near train tracks.
Yeah.
But they're like, we'll ignore those. He's killing everyone else.
Oh, it's a great movie. It's a really, really good movie. And it's no surprise that it spawned, like, 5 sequels. There's another one coming soon. It's been 10 years since the last Final Destination movie. Isn't that crazy?
No.
Yeah. 10 years.
So they put out 5 Final Destination movies in 10 years? 2000 to 2010?
Yeah, I guess so, eh?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Good stuff.
I honestly think it's such a, like, a lasting franchise. I don't think it'll ever be done. Because it's so regurgitatable.
Yeah, and I hope they never get rid of it. I think it's brilliant. But this is the movie that started it all. Kim, what's your rating of Final Destination?
Surprise, surprise, I'm giving it a 4 out of 4 premonitions.
I'm giving it a 3.75 out of 4. Am I allowed to go that granular with it?
I suppose.
Okay. Well, if I'm allowed, then yeah. But I won't
go... You can't just give it a 4 out of 4.
That third act was real.
You could give it a premise bump, John.
I'm going to give it a premise bump. That sounds fair. I assumed, I was like, yeah, I've seen this movie a billion times. 4 out of 4. It's going to be rad. I love it. But I guess when you watch it critically for the podcast.
Don't do that.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's a damn near perfect movie, and I have a blast.
It is a damn perfect movie.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Which surely someone has said about our next movie.
Do you think so? Do you think somebody has said that?
Probably. Honestly, it's like pure modern exploitation filmmaking. And if you think this movie is trash, but you'll watch grindhouse movies from the 70s and call them the height of cinema, then you are watching movies wrong, because they are essentially the same fucking movie. We're talking about the Samuel Jackson cult classic, Snakes on a Plane.
Security scenarios we ran. I'm smack in the middle of one we didn't think of.
Can anybody hear me?
Let's go!
Shh. Did you guys hear that?
Snakes on a Plane from 2006 is currently sitting at a 5.4 out of 10 on IMDb, 69% on Rotten Tomatoes, 58% on Metacritic, and 2.4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic like Snakes on a Plane more than they like Final Destination.
I gotta admit, though, and I think I'm speaking for the crowd here when I say that I was fucking surprised that this was an actual movie.
Oh, like when you first heard it, you thought it was just a joke.
No, but I mean, watching it, I was surprised It was an actual movie. Like, they fucking try?
Yeah, it's a full-ass movie.
They try throughout, and they make snakes being on a plane almost plausible.
This movie was kind of a running joke between me and a few friends in high school before it came out, because we just heard, you know, like TMZ or somebody, like, Samuel Jackson to star in new thriller Snakes on a Plane.
So it went viral before it came out, yeah. Basically, and people kind of went crazy for it.
Yeah.
For the title alone.
It's a perfect title.
It is a really good title, and actually Samuel Jackson fought to keep the title.
I heard that.
Because at one point they changed it. I think it's Flight 118. I wanted to remember.
Fuck that. That's boring as shit.
Coming into this episode, I wanted to remember both flight numbers. But yeah, that was going to be the title. And then Samuel Jackson forced them to change it back because he's like, I signed on for that title.
Yeah, that's a title. Like, that's a fucking title.
It's a great title. It's a fucking t-shirt. Yep. The title is ready to be a t-shirt.
I also want to point out before we get too far into anything that the movie, it's another New Line Cinema production, who also did Final Destination, who of course also did Nightmare on Elm Street. The movie shot by Adam Greenberg, who is the cinematographer for the first two Terminator movies, for Ghost, Sister Act, Near Dark, Once Bitten. You love that one.
I like that one.
Yeah, he's done a lot of fucking movies. And it's directed by David R. Ellis, who, I don't know if you saw this, also directed Final Destination 2.
Yeah!
And The Final Destination, which I think a lot of people hold up as their favorite.
Wow. There's like a serious crew behind this film, which is so crazy because it's, on surface level, not striving to be anything more than a B-movie. It's a totally competent B-movie. I think it's really well done and has a surprising amount of story. But, I mean, it was the laughing stock before it was released. Now, I don't know if it was like the laughing at or the laughing with, but like, yeah. Who even knows anymore with the internet? Right. How do you even know?
Hey, you want... So here's the thing. This came out in 2006. So you can't even say it was like really... I mean, it went viral in terms of the internet that we had in 2006. The first iPhone came out in 2006.
Fuck.
Isn't that crazy, though? When you think about like how fucked up things are in the world because of the internet, it's only been since 2006.
It is crazy, too, because that was kind of the end of our high school career.
Sure.
And I'm so, so thankful I didn't go through high school with iPhones.
That would have been tough.
I have complexes now from iPhones. Like, imagine if I had them when I was 14. I do not fucking envy parents and teenagers now and all that nonsense.
The thing about snakes on a plane.
The thing about snakes.
They shouldn't be on planes. Sweet, that's the one thing we know. No, the thing about Snakes on a Plane is like, yeah, you're right. It's a B-movie. It only really strives to be a B-movie. That doesn't mean that it's bad. Obviously doesn't mean it's bad if you're listening to this podcast. But everybody involved understood the fucking assignment is what
yes!
matters.
Yes!
Everybody.
That is such a good point. Okay, so I have a quote, and this kind of comes down with the fact that, you know, the internet was like ragging on the movie and whatever. Something cool kind of did come out of that because it was initially only supposed to be PG-13.
Oh.
But to bring it up to everybody's expectations, I think they did another like 6 or 7 days of reshoots.
Wow.
Not to fix the film or anything, like to add more plot, but to make it more R-rated.
Wow.
To add more gore and violence and probably those bathroom boobs.
I was going
to
say, like that whole Mile High sequence was because of this? All right.
But Samuel L. Jackson himself responded to the remarks about it being like a shitty movie. And mm-hmm. I think this was before it came out. So he said, "I feel sorry for all those people going through that whole trip of why would Samuel L. Jackson do something like this? It's lowbrow. It's a movie. People go to movies on Saturday to get away from the war in Iraq and taxes and election news and pedophiles online and just to go have some fun. And I like doing movies that are fun."
Right. It's just a fucking movie, everybody. Like, goddamn.
Yeah.
Wow. What an astute observation.
But it makes sense, too, why he was really pushing for them to keep the title, because this movie totally delivers on that really funny, like, there are fucking snakes on a plane biting a lot of people, but it has a full story and it has a like a lot of heart. We see Lin Shaye rescue a goddamn baby.
Fucking Lin Shaye, everybody. Holy shit.
Lin Shaye with a little bouffant.
And it's like, she's like, oh, the worst is so she's bitten and you know it's not gonna end well. But she's already saved a baby and that baby's mother, so like it's totally worth it. But she's down there with her flight attendant pals and she's like, they offered me early retirement this year. But this girl needed one last victory lap or something. One more tour of duty is what she said. Oh, Lin Shaye. Snakes on a Plane, as silly as it is, and even when you suggested doing this episode,
You really scoffed at
it. I scoffed, I laughed, because I was just like, I don't know if it's the right move. But it's a great pairing. I gotta hand it to you. This is a lot of fun. and I really like Snakes on a Plane because it's not trying to be a bad movie. I don't necessarily love when movies attempt to be so bad it's good.
Yeah, and I have a really hard time with parody films for that reason.
Yeah, we don't watch things ironically. We either like it or we don't. That's how I could come out
here. I think we love things ironically, but we don't have a conscious understanding of whether or not we're liking it ironically. Like, I think about some of our favorite bad movies, and like, we know that they're objectively bad, but I have fun watching them. So is it me watching it ironically? I don't know.
Yeah, like, I have a hoot watching Maximum Overdrive. Jason Takes Manhattan.
A whole hoot.
Yeah, like I genuinely enjoy those movies. Not because I think like, oh, this movie's so bad, I'm having such a great time watching them fail at making a movie. Like, I like those movies. And I like Snakes on a Plane.
I totally enjoy it. And there's some, I guess you could say, the lowbrow stuff that you're looking for, like snakes bite a full-out nipple. They bite some guy when he's peeing.
It's the fucking funniest thing in the whole goddamn movie, because he's trying to yank it off the whole time and it's not happening. And the whole time he's screaming, this fucking thing's biting my dick off!
But
it was great.
Like, there's some really jarring fucking... The snakes really go for the face, which is upsetting.
There are a few kills in this movie that really hurt to watch, but there's also one that I think it's the biggest laugh I've had all goddamn year, when a woman, they're in turbulence, they don't know that snakes are attacking everybody yet.
They don't know snakes on the plane.
They don't know snakes on a plane. Yeah. But, you know, the David Koechner, our co-pilot, who accidentally deploys the oxygen masks, is fighting some turbulence and a snake that's in the cockpit with him. A woman takes out a fucking barf bag to barf into, and a snake jumps out of it and bites her in the face.
And it was folded.
A folded barf bag. I love it. I love it so much. And hey, here's the other thing, though. As outlandish as this movie is, it's kind of a cool idea. Like, putting a bunch of snakes on a plane to kill a guy that you can't get to?
That's what I said. Like,
it's kind of a great idea.
Almost fucking plausible.
Yeah.
Trying to get past airport security. I don't know. You probably can't get a ton of snakes, but it's probably easier to get snakes than a bomb.
Oh, yeah, because they're sniffing around for bombs. And the snakes, I think the agent said as he was dying, Samuel Jackson's partner's like, they're cold-blooded. That's how we weren't able to catch them. Or, like, we didn't know they were on the fucking plane.
Cold-blooded doesn't mean they have no blood.
I have no idea. Like, they don't give off a heat signature is what he's trying to say. I don't believe it. I don't buy it. But they were hidden in the carton or the crate of Lay's that they give people as they go onto the plane.
Which were doused in pheromones.
Right? That's the genius part. Like, you know for a fact, the guy who was just coming up with this story was like, okay, so, witness for the prosecution. He's flying from Honolulu, because they got a tax credit, over to L.A. And they put a crate of snakes, and midway through the flight, they released the snakes. And somebody, a friend of his at the bar, probably was like, yeah, but how do the snakes find the guy?
Yeah, the snakes are just like, it's cold up here, I'm gonna have a nap.
Yeah, like, I don't know, we release pheromones? Like, don't you think people are gonna know pheromones are getting released in the airplane? Like, all right, fine. They douse the Lay's, so that way everybody's wearing them. And it immediately goes to attack all of the people who have just been spreading these pheromones around with these dumb Lay's they give you at the airport.
Yeah, and because it's a fucking plane, it doesn't really matter if they get that one particular target, because all they need to do is bring the fucking plane down.
Yeah, which is so evil. Like, for a fucking mobster to want to need to kill one guy, he's willing to kill, 367 souls.
Would you put it past a mobster with a hit out, though?
Not him. Not Eddie Wynn. Oh, he's a tough-looking motherfucker. Are you kidding me? He deliberately wore that white suit when he killed that attorney so he could get all that blood all over his white suit. I bet it's sitting in a case somewhere in his house.
Also, too, the special effects on the bitten people, that's another thing I wanted to call out, because, like, there are some really fucking gnarly extras in this.
Yeah, everybody swells up.
Yeah, like, I wasn't wishing wishing snake bites on people before this, and I'm definitely not going to now.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there's one woman in particular who we keep cutting back to. She gets, I wonder if it's the barf bag lady, but one woman gets bit on the face real early in the snake attack, and then we cut back to her and she is just like foaming from the mouth and her neck is bulging out. We see her again too, because she like flops into the hall or into the aisle between the seats, and it's gnarly.
Yeah. And one of the little boys, there's two little boys who are flying alone. They're flying from their dad to their mom, basically. And one of the flight attendants is obviously keeping care of them because of character arc. He gets bitten and one of the ladies sucks the venom out of his arm.
And when she punctures it, it's so disgusting.
Very gross.
Yeah.
Very yucky.
Yeah, we're very, I'm sure you can tell by now, not the kind of people that watch pimple popping videos.
Not into it.
No,
not
thank
a big
you.
Fan.
Don't understand how that's like, you could have an entire channel on TV at this point. There's enough of those TV shows that you could be watching that 24 hours a day if you wanted to.
I have my own shit to lance.
The worst part about that sequence when that woman is sucking the venom out of that kid's arm is that Kenan Thompson and his buddy are like turned on by it.
I know.
It's so gross. And this is from the same guy who's in pain, not Kenan Thompson, but his buddy, who's in pain the entire movie. Horrible pain.
He got a snake bite on his butt.
And he refuses to let a guy suck it out. It's just like, just fucking let him do it, man.
I guess because there's so many different variations of snake that you don't know how lethal the bite is that you have. But I would just assume, like, if I'm bitten, that I have been bitten by the most lethal snake.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants to suck the venom out is invited to suck the venom out.
Yeah, this is not a time to be precious about anything.
No.
About anything whatsoever. Also, do they not keep, like, a vacuum on board? Couldn't they just, like, suck it out with a vacuum? Just, like, give it a cut? Just, like,
I thought you were talking about the snakes. Like, why is this such a big deal?
Vacuum up the snakes. You imagine rolling into LAX, like, you okay? Yeah, we're fine, but you gotta do something about this Dyson. Like,
don't cut it open.
Oh, how did all those snakes, like, hang out friendly together in that same crate? Like, wouldn't they all hate each other? Isn't it just, like, throwing a bunch of different gangs together and be like, all right, play safe?
I don't know how snakes behave. Well,
yeah,
and that's the thing, too, is they're, like, they didn't just get snakes indigenous to one region. They just got some crazy snake breeder to just throw his most lethal snakes in a box.
Yeah. We need a mystery box of snakes to go in this plane, please.
That one huge-ass snake. Like, they had, like...
The anaconda?
A king constrictor. I don't know what the actual term is. But that was a big mamma jamma. And do you need it at that point? Like, you got a bunch of nimble little snakes who are biting necks fine. They're like, but we want a big one. Because somebody needs to constrict that asshole over there who killed the chihuahua.
Right? He totally threw... that poor dog.
I didn't like it. I did not approve.
You know, my favorite snake in the entire movie is the one snake who, as soon as the snake attack starts, is up there in coach. He finds a lei and he just wraps himself around it and he's just hanging out with that lei. He's like, got that pheromones. I'm right where I want to be. And he never attacked anybody. They cut back to that snake two or three times and he's just like, la 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 la, with
his
lei.
Living his best life?
Yeah, just rolling in the hay with this lei.
Like his catnip?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's great. I mean, I do also like the snake that bit that girl right on the boob. That was pretty funny. Those idiots. Like, you think you're going to get away with smoking weed and having sex on board? On the other hand, the flight attendants know all about it, and Lin Shaye is very interested.
She's like, get it.
Yeah. Man, what is it about movies set on planes that are just like, ah, the sky. Or not even the sky. Ah, the airplane bathroom. The most luxurious place to have sex. Like, no. It stinks because it's a bathroom. And it's tiny because it's an airplane.
Yeah.
I think they make it that size so you don't have sex in it.
Probably.
Yeah, I bet back in the day they were huge.
Also, airplanes are all about maximizing space and stuff so that they can minimize the amount of space that you have so that they can maximize the number of people in there.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I have never been on a fucking plane that has a stairwell.
Okay, this plane is a mansion.
It's
like 100,
huge.
This plane is insanely big.
Yeah, maybe it's just because we haven't ever been on like a long flight, because we always fly like within North America.
Is Hawaii to LAX that long?
I don't know. It can't be that long.
I guess they're going against the wind. Anyway, we've never been on a super long flight.
Yeah, I think the longest flight we've been on is like 6 hours.
Yeah, most.
Yeah.
And even then, it's just like...
From one side of Canada to the other.
Yeah, and cheapest flight possible. Like, we're not flying on the Concorde flight.
Yeah, and John and I don't even sit together half the time. Like,
it doesn't work
we
out.
We fly economy.
Yeah, we fly economy, and we don't wake up early to check in. We do not do that. No. We roll out of bed at noon, we get whatever seats are left over.
If you don't have the app, then I don't care my seat.
Pretty much. That is pretty much it. Kenan Thompson land in that fucking plane is the funniest shit ever, especially because he only has experience on a video game flight simulator, actually. Flight simulator, not a video game. Would you, if you had to go through a plane full of people, the pilot's dead, both pilots are dead, and you got to pick somebody to land the plane, don't you think you'd go for a gamer?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
100%.
100%.
Yeah.
Fucking Xbox controller looks like a plane thing.
I love to the
controller, remote.
No, it's a controller.
Steering wheel.
Controller. Controller.
I'm talking about the thing on the.
Oh fuck yeah! It's a steering wheel. It's totally a steering wheel. We're not pilots and we're not gamers. I'm really sorry, everybody. We've really let you down here, and we're not snake experts. But I really don't think you have to be to enjoy a movie like Snakes on a Plane.
I think we need to talk about the musical tie-in.
Yeah, Song of the Summer from 2006.
Song of My Life. Is it just called Snakes on a Plane?
It's called Snakes on a Plane.
Oh, I'm ready for it.
Come on, bring it. By Pop
Cobra All- Starship.
By Pop All Stars, Cobra Starship.
Yeah, so when this movie came out, I don't remember if I saw it in theaters, but I definitely purchased the album from this band.
That's great.
Who it's is like a not group, a real right? band. Yeah, I guess is a super group because I don't think they did anything after that. They had another single that was actually really good. And I had no idea, like, I guess they started for the movie with this song. I love a movie tie-in, though. And this song is bomb.
It's real good. And it's got a sweet music video. Samuel Jackson showed up to sit in a chair while they filmed it.
And have you ever seen a full-out music video in the credit roll?
Yeah, that's a really good point. They put it in the credits.
It's a fucking great song, though. I'm putting it on my Spotify right now.
It's been on every iPod you've ever had. I bet if we, went into the attic or, found a bin somewhere that had an iPod from a few years ago, that'd be one of the only songs on
it. It holds 16 songs, and one of them is the Snakes on a Plane song.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't revisited this movie since it came out. I was so surprised that it held up. It's a fun, totally rewatchable movie.
Super fun.
And I was not expecting that. I remember being like, yeah, these are great together. John. And then being like, please God, be decent. Please God, be okay.
So there's a few things that I want to mention before we go, but it's not like they spark a whole lot of discussion. One, when they finally land, they just, fuck it. Yeah, the trial happened. The guy goes to jail. We just skip.
Let's go surf.
All of that. Yeah, then we cut to Bali, where we're teaching Samuel Jackson how to surf. The other thing is that as they're getting off, oh, man, you think everything's going to be cool, but the killer always comes back for one last shot. He attacks the witness that we've been trying to keep safe this entire movie. And Samuel Jackson, in his infinite wisdom, is like, I need to save this kid. Better shoot the snake that's on his chest. Which, we learned 30 seconds later. He had a bulletproof vest on this whole time.
But for a few seconds there, I was like, is
that the right move?
Is he a rogue agent?
Yeah, right? If that were the case, he would have just, kicked the kid out of the way into the snakes at some point.
I was like, did they pay him off?
That would have been hilarious, yeah. Maybe that's what we were supposed to think. That it's just like, oh my God.
That was a lot of work, though. Why save, I guess, self-preservation? Okay.
Yeah, still have to land that plane. Yeah. Want to live, that's, for sure.
That's fair.
But the other thing, too, is like, okay, everybody loves, I'm sick of these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
Yeah.
Have you seen the TV edit?
No.
I'm sick of these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane, is how they edit that. taking the words motherfucker out of Samuel Jackson's mouth should be a crime. That's culture. That's American culture right there. But
that should be above the MPAA.
Yeah. We only have one exception.
Yeah, that's the asterisk to a PG-13 rating. Only one fuck allowed. Unless you're Samuel Jackson, then you get five. He that's gets good. Five fucks to every regular one.
He's earned it. He's put in his dues. I think my favorite line in the movie, this rewatch, is it's a quick little exchange between Samuel Jackson and the snake expert. He's on the phone. They're racing toward a clinic where they can get some fucking antidote to meet them at the tarmac. And Samuel Jackson's like, all right, we're going to round up some snakes. We're going to get some descriptions for you so you know exactly what kind of antidote to get. And he goes, all right, be quick, though. Time is tissue. And Samuel Jackson looks at the phone. Time is tissue? Fucking funniest take of the whole movie. I think funnier than the motherfucking snakes bit. You can really see that they forced that motherfucking snakes line in the movie, right?
I think that was a reshoot. I think that line was originally a lot softer, and they were like, we gotta bring up the heat for the internetters.
Yeah. We've been given the go on the motherfucker code.
Screenwriter unlocks a button.
Two keys in one suitcase.
Lifts up the case.
Oh, good stuff. So, Kim, what, again, thank you for this pairing. This was a blast. And I'm sorry for rolling my eyes at it. It was a lot of fun. What's your rating of Snakes on a Plane?
I had a lot of fun watching this, and I love a creature feature that is creature's feature.
Yeah.
Where it's just like a bunch of things.
Animals attack!
Yeah, I'm gonna get us to watch frogs one day on here.
It's doable.
We'll figure it out. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 4.
Okay, I was going to say, if you need a minute to think, I'm sitting over here locked and loaded, ready to give it a 3 out of 4. So like, I'm glad we're both in the same wavelength here. Man, what a fun movie. But that's just our opinion. Let us know what you thought of Final Destination and Snakes on a Plane. I'm sure if you are of a certain age, you've seen both of these movies several hundred times. Hit us up on Twitter at NOFS Podcast or in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at NOFSpodcast.com/Discord.
Support the Nightmare on Film Street podcast by buying a t-shirt at store.nofspodcast.com. We have tons of Nightmare on Film Street related merch, and we also have some really fun horror tees for every type of horror fan, so check those out at store.nofspodcast. And if you want to support us and join the Fiend Club, head over to nofspodcast.com/fiendclub. We have monthly live streams, watch parties, and tons of fun exclusive content over there.
I mean, this podcast is coming out at the end of August, but at the time of recording, Kim just put out some really dope Goosebumps t-shirts on the store. As well, if you were a big fan of Fear Street, you can get your own Color Wars 78 shirt. Red team or blue team, your choice. But keep in mind that you can always support the show for free by recommending it to a friend that you think would love it.
Yeah, or hitting that subscribe button and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. Those are all totally helpful things that you can do, and they cost nothing.
But that's it from us this week. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive. But we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.